So to look at yourself as an audience member, when you've recorded it visually, you know, open Zoom and just do it, you and, you know, just watch it afterwards. It's really, really helpful for improving your skills.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Ellen Finkelstein. Here's three facts that I think you should know about her. One, she's a PowerPoint MVP and has been since 2010. That's a Microsoft award, and it stands for Most Valuable Professional. There are only 18 of those in the United States. Two, she's been training and writing about PowerPoint since 1999, including several books and her PowerPoint tip blog.
Yes.
Three, she isn't a designer, so she loves to help non-designers create great PowerPoint slides that communicate clearly, command attention, and help the audience understand and remember the message.
Okay.
Ellen Finkelstein, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks so much, George. I actually think that the name of your podcast, Your Intended Message, is just so right for you because we know each other going back a long time, some of the books you wrote, and you've always been an idea guy, you know, about marketing and about messaging and presenting. And so Your Intended Message is just the right thing.
Thank you. It's just taken me decades to find the right slogan, the right fit there. And I'm glad that that's
working. I like it.
And on the topic of intended message, as you probably know, there are many times people stand up and deliver a PowerPoint presentation and their intended message doesn't get through. What are the reasons that PowerPoint presentations fail?
Wow, that's a big question. Okay. I would say three different pieces to that puzzle. One is what you say, the actual content. The other one would be the design of the slides. We all know about death by PowerPoint, and that's more about the slides. And then the final part of it is your delivery, how you do it. So I think of presentations having those three pieces. So if you don't know your audience well, you don't know what they need or what they want or where what level of expertise they have or whatever, you know, all these different pieces of it, then it's really easy to create a presentation, the actual content, that is going to miss its mark. And this can be difficult. You can be in an audience with multiple levels of expertise, for example, and all teachers know this because they experience this in their classroom. And so you do have to figure out how to speak to your audience, what your audience is going to respond to. You also have to figure out what's important to them, what would be an important message. And then, of course, there's always like what you want to get across, what you think is important. And it just varies in so many situations. So if you are doing some training inside your own company, your training manager might have told you, you know, the boss says that everybody needs to know such and such. And so, you know, they don't have a choice so much. You have to get across some important information, you know, that you've been told is important for them. On the other hand, if they think they already know it, you might have to adjust. You know, they might say, hey, we already know this. This is ridiculous. And so there's that adjustment of you know, what you think is important, what they think is important. If you're doing a keynote or you're doing a sales presentation, there are just so many different situations. But I think a lot of it is just what is important to you and what is important to your audience. And of course, you have, as I mentioned, you have to know your audience. And so that's how you have to write the content. And I do recommend doing that outside of PowerPoint, you know, just thinking about what you're saying. So number two, I'll just go really quickly on the slide part. But everybody knows what death by PowerPoint is. It's just lots and lots of text on a slide, you know, slide after slide of text. There's a fair amount of research that shows that we can't listen and look at the same time. That research is why there are some states that have laws against even being on the phone while you're, you know, you're listening to someone and talking to somebody while you're driving, okay? Because you can't really listen and see at the same time. Probably what the person is saying on the phone is a lot more interesting than what's in front of you. So when you put up a slide with a lot of text, people start to read it. We're more visual. The part of the brain that takes in visual information is much bigger than the part that takes in auditory information. So people read it, but they can read faster than you can speak. So they read ahead of you. They're not listening. And then when they're finished, they go back to listening to you and they see that, oh, I've already read that. So why should I pay attention to the speaker? You know, so all of that piece of it and the value of using visuals to attract attention on the design side of it. And then finally, the delivery. There are different pieces about it, but you need to engage with the audience. You know, eye contact is a little piece of it, but it's just engaging with them. So interacting with them instead of only taking questions at the end. Why don't you ask them questions and see how they feel? It's a great way to find out what they think is important. And so just all of that, being, you know, smiling, being engaging, being a real person, being authentic, you know, that's using your hands. So all of those things are important in the delivery so that people pay attention to you and then they're going to understand what you say. People don't pay attention. You know, these days people are on their phones and so on like that. So you really do have to engage in your delivery.
So three components there: content, design, and delivery.
Yep.
And well, I watched a presentation last week that all the content was on the slide and the delivery was just rapid fast.
Oh.
Just rapid fast talking. And
that's the kind of presentation that AI could take over.
Yes. Yes.
Not good.
And so let's look at the design aspect because
sure.
Most of us, like you, we're not designers, but what could we do to design a better slide?
Sure. So especially for non-designers, I do recommend using the layouts that are in PowerPoint. There's a template. I don't recommend fancy templates with lots of sort of distracting things in the background, something simple. And there are these layouts and they help you design a slide. And if you, so I know people who just like use the blank layout and then they just put text boxes all over, but they're going to be inconsistent. They're going to be both in place and, you know, and in size and all of that. So let PowerPoint do that part of the design for you. There is a feature in PowerPoint called the design tab, and it sometimes comes up with some nice layouts and treatments, and you can use those, you know, definitely. We're just in the cusp of, you know, really starting to use Copilot, which is Microsoft's AI within Office. And so you can use it in PowerPoint. It's not really up to the task of designing slides yet, but they're working on that. So, you know, and right now you might just end up using that design tab. So I recommend as little text as possible on the slide. And you were talking about, you know, all the text being there. You can use the notes pane and put it there. And then if you're presenting, you can use presenter view, which shows you those. So as little text as possible on the slide, and then some type of image to show what you're saying. So I use a phrase called tell and show. It's the opposite of show and tell. So the title tells the point that you're making. It's not just a heading. It's just, it makes a statement that's a statement you want to make. And then some image, usually a photograph. These days, icons are very popular and they work as well. But something that shows people what you're saying. And shows people in terms of understanding and often in terms of emotion. Maybe you'll ask me, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, eliciting emotion. If you want to say something like, you know, when you buy my product, you'll be happy. So we know what people do, you know, professionals do. They put a picture of a happy person there, you know, that looks like their ideal client. So you can do something like that. But whatever it is, sometimes it's more of a diagram to explain a concept or a process, whatever it is. But some visual way of helping people to understand, and that visual component also attracts attention. So it helps people both understand and remember. And visuals, especially photographs, do also tend to be more persuasive. And if that's what you're trying to do, then that's also an additional element to designing.
Emotional images. I immediately thought of babies and puppy dogs.
Yeah, so they should be relevant. So they shouldn't be just, you know, I remember speaking to somebody and he was a doctor and he was training nurses and he just like put roses all around the edges of his slides, you know, and I said, that's not relevant to what you're teaching. It ends up being distracting. So yes, that image, whatever image you use, should help people understand and remember what you are saying.
And should the images be professional images, or is it okay to take a photo of something in our office or a product or a building and include that in the slideshow?
I actually recommend that, George. I think that's like a great point that you're making. So on one hand, we want it to look professional, but on the other hand, stock photos often look like stock photos. And so they end up being a little fake. It just, you have to have a balance there of as being authentic as possible, but yet professional. And so absolutely taking a picture of a photo, taking a picture, anything that you take that's relevant, you know, like if you're doing corporate training, in-house training, so get together a bunch of employees in your office and take a picture of them. Yes, you need their permission to do that, but that's a lot more authentic and meaningful to your students than some stock photo that they know is not an employee.
And why do you think people put so much text on their slides?
So they're afraid of forgetting what they're going to say. So that's why they're using it like a teleprompter. But, you know, we're not the president of the United States. We don't need to do that. So I think it's so funny how you see, you know, whatever, you know, anyone who's using a teleprompter, they like look to one side and they look to the other. There are two teleprompters and it's just like this and this. And then the last statement they've memorized and they go right into the camera. It's pretty fake. But for that purpose, they have to be very particular about what they say. So there are lots of ways around that. And the first way around that is going to be the way that most people are going to resist, but practicing. And so, yeah, you need to practice, especially if it's an important presentation. Now, I understand if you're going to do 8 hours of training, you're not going to go through and practice the whole thing, maybe just the beginnings of things or whatever, your introduction, something like that. But for a talk that's an hour or something like that, that's a very typical talk that you might do, you should practice it several times, absolutely, until you feel comfortable with it. And the second thing I mentioned is that presenter screen, which functions a little bit like a teleprompter. And so the audience doesn't see it. You see your notes that you've put in the text pane, but they just see the slides. And finally, if you really feel you have to, and there are situations sometimes where you can't use presenter view because you're speaking to the in a special conference room and you don't even have control over the slides, you know, and it's the CEO you're presenting to. I did some training for a company in Texas and they were talking about that kind of situation. Notes, just, you know, put whatever it's index cards or notes or something like that and put them down and just, you know, refer to them. But if you've practiced, then it will go a lot more smoothly. So I think it's basically people are just afraid they'll forget what they have to say. Now, there is one other thing I do want to say about that. And that is, especially if you're training and teaching, your audience sometimes wants to be taking notes. You know? But the problem is that they're not listening. I went to college. I remember taking notes. And you're just frantically writing notes and you don't really hear. And so something that you can do is you can say, now I will give you the notes of everything I say afterwards. And by doing it afterwards, you know, they kind of have to listen to you and you can create a PDF what's called notes pages. So it's the slide and the notes, and you go to, it's a print thing, and you choose notes pages instead of slides, and then you can print that to a PDF driver. And that way they get everything, you know, all of the notes as well. So if the audience needs all of that, you know, that's another reason people sometimes want to put everything on the slide. You can give it to them without putting them on the slide.
Mm. And the beauty of that, Ellen, that I see is that if you tell people, don't worry, I'm going to give you this later, now they can stick back and go, whew, okay, I'll just listen.
Yeah, they can. And they can take notes if they want. You know, that's fine about what's important, you know, to them, or some aha moments. You could suggest that. You can say, look, I'm going to give you the notes of what I say, but feel free to write down like an aha moment or a question that you have, you know, that will something that's important to you.
Hmm. Now, let's go back to the slide. What are some good guidelines or tests when someone looks at a slide and sees text there? Is it okay to have some text?
It's okay to have some text, yes. You know, a simple solution to some of that is to just, you know, I like to put one point on a slide, but sometimes you want it before you're going to discuss a topic. These are the topics I'm going to discuss. So you put them there, and then you can discuss them on separate slides and then say, let's just summarize. These are the things I covered. And so you'd have a little list there. So you can take a list and you can just duplicate the slides and put one point on a slide. So it's on three slides if you have 3 points instead of one slide. You can animate so that people see it one at a time. And then at the end, they see all of it together. So you can have a little roundup discussion about all the points together so people see them. So I just think as little as possible. I do like using SmartArt. That's a feature of PowerPoint that turns text and makes it more graphic looking. And so it just attracts a little bit more attention. But even then, it's, you know, even I find myself putting too much text on a slide sometimes, and I sometimes have to catch myself. No, you don't need to do that, Ellen.
Animations and transitions. Is that okay, or is that too... I don't know what the word I'm looking for.
Distracting, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't use transitions at all unless I'm trying to connect two slides together. Like maybe there was too much to put on a slide and I can pan it up and so it looks like a continuation or something like that. Or you could do a fast fade between slides. I think other than that, or you want to do something for children or something that's funny. You know, that's another, like I sometimes do a thing and there's a curtains open and it's like dramatic, you know, so presenting, da, da, da. So there are reasons, but mostly they tend to be distracting. Animations, so I would say never make text move. So don't make text fly in or fly up or, you know, occasionally you could use a zoom or something like that. It's almost always annoying to the audience because as the text is flying in, they see it, so they start to try to read it, but it's moving. It's like, how do I read this? And so it's just, it gives people a headache. It's not nice to the audience to do that. So I would say I almost always use either appear or fade if I'm using it on text. You know, it doesn't move at all, but there are cases where it helps people to understand the process. So if you're trying to show something as a cycle process, you know, you might want to like wipe an arrow down and showing this comes and then this comes and then this comes. You're showing a process through the animation. It's helping make something clear by the animation. So it just depends how you're using it. Just try to make sure it's not just there. So here's the thing. People say, it's a boring slide. How can I liven it up? But that's a that's a bad way of looking at it. You don't add animation because the slide is boring. You make the slide less boring, you know, and instead of just making it distracting. So that might be, a nice picture that's relevant to it, you know, something like that, that's going to make it, well, maybe your topic, you know, maybe you should take that out and put something more interesting. But don't put in animation or decoration to dress up a boring slide because that's just distracting.
So the content of the slide itself, if it's boring, don't try to pretty it up. Rearrange the content or take something out.
Yeah. So I just did some training for a law firm. And, you know, there's like no way to make quoting a paragraph in the law exciting. You know, there's just nothing you can do. But sometimes you can talk about it in a metaphorical way. You can give it a metaphor. So, you know, there was one example of something like, you know, a path to doing something. And so you can have a picture of a path there, and people kind of glom onto that. They say, oh, it's a path. And then they tend to remember that what you're talking about because they've seen that picture. It's relevant in a sense that it's a metaphor. It's a connection. It's, you can't, you know, quoting the law, there's, you're not going to make it relevant to that so much, but you can make metaphorical connections to it and then, you know, use that image to make it interesting. But it still should be static, you know, it still should just be very simple. You want to think of your slides as kind of visually fairly low key. And again, you know, there are always exceptions. So, you know, if you're a keynote speaker or you're trying to sell, you know, maybe you want to excite people, and then your design should follow what you're trying to do.
Mm. And I like the idea of looking for a metaphor from the text itself and trying to find a visual that matches that metaphor.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that is a way to make a connection between what you're saying and having some image that will keep people's attention and help them understand. So why is this paragraph of a section of the law important? Well, it's giving us a path to solving a problem or whatever it might be. And so let's think of it that way. That's what's why it's on the slide. That's why it's important, because it's giving us a path forward, even though that path, you know, there's nothing in the actual text of that law that has anything to do with a path.
Okay, so a little bit of creative thinking there when one looks at one's notes.
Yes, yes.
What about the scourge of numbers? How can we talk about and represent numbers?
So that's a good question. So almost always you want to represent them in some graphical way. So for numbers, that's often a chart or a graph. It could be a table. But if there's any trend or something like that, then you almost always going to want to use a chart. PowerPoint calls them a chart, but most of us from high school, we used to call it a graph, but whatever it is. Yeah. And so that can always help. There's a principle, though. Again, you want to make that chart as simple as possible, get away from as many extra lines as, you know, if you don't need all those cross lines for each part of the axis, you know, if you don't need them, you can maybe label the values, you know, on the chart. So just making it as simple as possible. And then only putting in there what's necessary for your point. So if you're copying and pasting from Excel, which is a very common thing to do with numbers, you might have a lot more than you need to explain to your audience. So just pull in what's necessary for people to see to understand the point that you're making. And then also the title, you know, I talked about the tell and show principle. So you could say something like, you know, third quarter sales. But that doesn't really say anything. And then people have to like try to figure out the chart. Like, what is it saying about third quarter sales? So instead, the title could be third quarter sales were up 5%. And now all of a sudden, everybody knows, oh, that's what you're trying to say. I don't have to try to figure, you know, okay, you've proved it, but now I remember the point.
And so make the title have more meaning instead of just simply something bland.
Yes, absolutely. Making it a statement instead of like just a heading, a generic heading. Yeah.
What about making the title a question that gets answered by what's on the slide? Is that a technique that's
working? Yeah, it's a wonderful technique. Anytime that you can, I mean, I don't think it would be necessarily for that chart, but anytime you can create anticipation or you can engage people with a question, that's a great thing to be able to do. Whether you're going to ask the audience what they think about it or have a conversation about it, or just you're going to answer the question. It's a great way to, you can actually make the title of your presentation a question if you want, you know, like, how are we going to recover from whatever, something that happened, you know, and then people go, oh, I want to know that. So absolutely, questions are great. That's a good point, George.
I've heard some people ask questions or give guidelines. How long should a slide be up? How many slides should there be in the deck? Are those questions valid?
So there are some guidelines that I would recommend, but mostly the point is what's going to communicate best. So sometimes people say you shouldn't have too many slides, but if you're going to keep people on the same slide for a long period of time, they're going to get bored with it usually, unless you're having a discussion. You know, you could stop on a slide and say, let's stop and talk about this and, you know, engage with the audience. But usually, yes, you will get more attention from the audience the faster you go through the slides, because every new slide is a new thing for them to see. And we're just kind of hardwired to pay attention to new things that happen. So as long as you're not thinking of, you know, printing them out, you know, that's not an issue, or, you know, there's some reasons. For example, if you're doing a venture capitalist presentation and you're not going to present it on a screen at all, you're just going to hand them the PDF. It is however many pages. And usually there's a very specific thing. First page should this, and the second page should be, you know, your business plan. And the third place is the people, there are all these things. And I remember speaking to a client who was selling to Walmart. And the big box stores, you also have to print it out because they're like 100 buyers in this huge room, you know, and you're in a cubicle, and there's no way you're going to put it on a screen. You just have to hand it over to them, and they require certain statistics to show that you could produce as many as they might buy and so on like that. It's very dense. So there are times when you want to make it dense, but that's really not a presentation. It's just a document that you're creating in PowerPoint, and there is a big difference. But when you're presenting, yeah, I just feel like you want it to be kind of go along at a good clip with new slides, and don't worry about how many slides there are. Worry that you can finish it in the time that you've been given. And this is a problem, and you do solve that problem by practicing and by recording it and timing yourself as you practice to make sure you don't go over the time or too much under the time.
There's that word again that a lot of people don't like, practice.
I know. I'm sorry.
But it's so important.
It is. It is.
No one got to be good or even great without practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And each presentation, you know, we can get good at speaking. So now I'm not speaking with a script. You're asking me questions. It's extemporaneous type of speaking. And you can get better at that with practice, but it's not like I've practiced these specific answers because I didn't know what the questions was going to, you know, were going to be. But if you're doing a specific presentation, practicing that specific presentation, that really never goes away. Good speakers do that all the time. They don't say, oh, I don't need to anymore.
What about, consider this situation. You're presenting an important presentation. You've got your slides and the projector dies. What do people do then?
Well, if it's just the projector and your computer is still okay, you know, there are all sorts of different things. The electricity could go out altogether. And for that reason, if it's a really high, you know, extremely important thing that has to go well, like you're going to sell $1 million product or something like that, you should have everything printed out so that you can, you know, work without electricity, or you might have it on your phone, which is a common thing these days, which will work without electricity. And you could do it from your phone. So you should have some kind of alternative. And so you could all just do it from your computer if the projector died and just say, you know, everybody sees the projector died. You know, I suppose if it was really important, you could either bring your own projector or bring a second projector. I'm sure there are people who do that. You know, certainly test the bulb, because bulbs can go out at any time and have a new bulb, you know, available, those kinds of things. Most people don't use projectors anymore. They're usually connecting to a TV screen. So it's a little bit different. And you're not going to bring your own TV screen to the presentation. So they're just different ways to do it. You know, you can do it without them seeing the slides. You can just talk. You can have it printed and use that if there's no electricity whatsoever. You can certainly promise to give them the slides afterwards, you know, to send it to them.
Ellen, through your experience over the years of not only studying and watching, but also training and coaching other presenters, what has been some of the advice that you've given that people have found most surprising?
So I think one of them, or maybe surprising or most uncomfortable, is that when you practice, you need to record yourself and then watch it. So, and the surprising thing is that they don't like how they look. You know, it's not a comfortable thing to do, but it's really, really valuable for you to watch what you look like, because there are things that you don't realize, because we're sort of in our head when we're speaking. We're not, you know, so to look at yourself as an audience member when you've recorded it visually, just sit, you know, open Zoom and just do it, you, and, you know, just watch it afterwards. It's really, really helpful for improving your skills. So I think that's the thing that people kind of freaked out about a little bit and then were uncomfortable, but then they went, yes, this was valuable.
And Ellen, for people who'd like to know more about how to create better slides, they can find that at your website, your 13 techniques that'll make designing the slides easy. And we'll include that link in the description below. I've had a look at that myself. There's not only a PDF, there's some wonderful videos there as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's video training. And then there's some PDF stuff as well. Yep.
Find that link in the description below. Ellen, as we prepare to wrap up, as we prepare to close, if you could sit down with a business leader who wants to improve the presentation level of their people, especially their slides and how they work with their slides, because this leader is just fed up with sitting through too many boring presentations where they want to bang their head again on the desk, what one, two, or three pieces of advice would you give that leader so that they can encourage their team to be better?
So I just did some training like that last year for a company. And what I was training the accountants. And you would think, accountants? But the accountants are always presenting to senior management, like constantly. And in fact, in this company, they were even presenting to state governments and even international governments. Okay. So yeah, they hired me to do that training for them. So I think putting that attention on, and what was interesting about it was the accountants themselves that asked for it. You know, they might present to the CEO, and the CEO would kind of make some comment like, we don't want our accounting department to look like we don't know how to present. We want to look more professional. And so that kind of training is really valuable. You could certainly create a little study group where people present to each other and then critique each other, as long as that's done in a positive way, and practice with each other. So both the slides and the delivery, all of those things, you could do it in-house, and maybe there's a person in-house that can do that kind of training as well. So I just think practicing and having some guidelines, you know, that leader might say something specific, like too many words on a slide, or it maybe he or she doesn't even really know what's wrong with it, but it's just boring. There must be something better a better way for you to do it. So I think, again, a lot of it is training and practice.
Training and practice. My guest today is Ellen Finkelstein, reminding you that when you create your slides, think of it as tell and show.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.